Okay, great. All right, so we're talking about craving Kedusha. And just a very quick review. The point being is that I believe that we need a laser-focused mission statement for what it means to live a Torah life. And I've asked numerous educators this question, and strangely enough, I get very different answers, and I think we need to come to clarity on that. Some educators have told me that they believe that the mission of a Torah life is to do mitzvahs, and that's it, you just do mitzvahs. Another told me that the goal of a Torah life, the mission statement of a Torah life, is Yirat Shemayim, to live as a God-fearing person. And another person told me that the goal of a Torah life is to make Hashem happy. He's not happy, and He created us so that He can now be happy. Right? So I don't accept those positions, even though I know where they're getting it from in terms of the sources that I think is being somewhat misread. But I believe that the mission statement of a Torah life, the goal of a Torah life, is Kedusha. It is to live holiness, to be holy. And where do we get that from? We get that not only from Kedoshim Tihiyu, you shall be holy, right? But we actually repeat our mission statement quite regularly, because before we do a mitzvah, we make a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Asher Kidishanu B'mitzvotah, blessed be you Hashem, who has made us holy through your mitzvot. A mitzvot. And therefore, mitzvot are in order to enable us to achieve holiness. Yeah.
Why? What are the reasons that it's not the other answers?
Because only my answer is always right, okay? No, because we'll see, right, that first of all, it's not mentioned anywhere in your bracha, you know, that you've made us into Yirei Shemayim, right? Or you've, right, as well as we're soon going to see Rav Kook saying this. He got it from me, okay? So we'll see that Rav Kook actually says this point, okay? And we'll understand it even on a more kind of philosophical level, why this has to be the goal of a Torah life, why this is actually what it's about. Yeah?
There's like aspects of the Torah life that are beyond mitzvot, beyond like what we say in this preface or how it's like.
That's true. Even learning Torah, even celebrating Shabbat. Everything you do in life is to eventually achieve a status of Kedusha. Question is, what is Kedusha? Right? What does it feel like to live a life of Kedusha? Why would I want to live a life of Kedusha? Okay? And that's what we're going to try and address. So yesterday, we took a look at this picture over here. Right? Specimen number A. Right? Okay, this picture. And what we pointed out in this picture is you cannot count the people in this picture because they're all completely connected to each other. And just like you're not allowed to count people for a minyan, because who's number one? Who's number one? Right? If we're all connected, so as I pointed out, if we look at this fellow here with the shtreimel, well then, he is really a unique manifestation of everybody in the picture. He can't exist without everybody in the picture. If we pull him out of the picture, everybody disappears. And that's what M.C. Escher was suggesting in this picture, which is there is an interfacing, an interconnection. And even though she's not him, and he's not her, and they're not them, they cannot exist without each other. Okay? And that is what this picture is suggesting. And that goes very well with a piece that we learned yesterday from the Ramak, from Rav Moshe Cordovero, that he basically said that all of Israel are kindred. You know, we are all, so to speak, blood brothers, blood sisters and brothers. And that's because each soul includes every other soul. There's a part of you in me, and there's a part of me in you. And therefore, we have to love each other, because loving each other is just the natural flow of loving myself. So if this guy, we're told, love your neighbor as yourself, he'd say, well, why? Well, what do I have to do with my neighbor? Right? You cannot exist without your neighbor. You and your neighbor are one, although not one and the same. You are an individual expression of this collective group, right? And so is every single person in the group, an expression of the collective group. Okay? So today we're going to take a look at something that Rav Kook said, and number four. This from Orot HaKodesh, Chilek Gimel from volume 3. And there he talks about Musar HaKodesh. What is holy morality? In other words, there's a different kind of morality, right, which is not holy morality. And Rav Kook is going to distinguish what we understand to be holy morality. So we're going to read a translation of Rav Kook, and this is what he says. The ultimate goal of life is holiness. Okay, so there you go, right? That is the ultimate life goal, to be holy. Holiness is supreme unity, which contains nothing of the weakness of morality. Okay? So Rav Kook is distinguishing between morality and holiness. As I pointed out to you, one of my students had gone into my office and said that his father was the most moral man he ever met. He did not believe that his father would have been more moral had he lived a Torah life. So I asked him, do you think your father would have been holier? Okay? The truth is that you can't be holy if you're not moral, but you could be moral and still not accomplish your goal in life, which is to be holy. And the question is, what is the difference? Well, already Rav Kook is telling us that there's a weakness to morality, which holiness does not have. Okay? That holiness does not have. What is that weakness? So you're going to discover that this piece of Rav Kook is really, according to the students of Rav Kook, referencing Friedrich Nietzsche. Right? Nietzsche, who was a very well-known German philosopher, he said that morality, religion, is going to go bankrupt. It cannot survive. Why cannot it survive? Because the basic nature of the human being is to be selfish. And morality is asking you to be selfless. It's asking you to put others before yourself. Right, is asking you to overcome basic instincts that are natural to the human being. It's bound to go bankrupt. Morality cannot survive because the human being, by definition, is selfish. Okay, Rav Kook is going to agree with Friedrich Nietzsche that morality, as it stands, will not survive, but holiness will. And the question is, what is the difference between morality and holiness? Okay, so he says like this. Holiness does not fight against the self-love embedded deep within the soul of every living being, but rather it sets man in such a superior state that the more he loves himself, the more the good within him will spread over all around him, over the world, the whole world, all of being. In other words, Rav Kook is agreeing with Friedrich Nietzsche that embedded within the soul of the human being is self-love. And morality is asking us to give up our self-love, right? And it's better to give than to receive and all that, you know. Rav Kook is saying no. He's saying that holiness does not fight self-love. Morality fights self-love. Morality says you should not love yourself more than your neighbor, right? But you have to give up your love for yourself to be good to your neighbor, right? Well, Rav Kook is saying, no, it's not true. Maybe that's true with morality, but it's not true with holiness. Holiness does not fight against self-love. Why? Because deep within the soul, there's self-love. And the more, he says, it sets man in such a superior state that the more he loves himself, the more good he will do. In other words, Rav Kook is saying that your goal, the way to accomplish holiness, is to love yourself. But to really love yourself. Because if you really, really loved yourself, then what would naturally happen?
Love others.
You would love everybody else. Why? Because we're all a part of each other. In other words, if this guy over here, right, we're told, love yourself, but really love yourself. He has to love everybody because everybody is a part of himself. Okay? And therefore, Rav Kook is saying, you know what? You need to love yourself in the name of holiness. You need to love yourself, and that's what holiness is saying. Holiness is saying that you, right, you have a love embedded within you, and the love within you will extend and include everyone, not just Jews, everyone, because everyone is a part of you. Each and every one of us is an individual manifestation of global self, Every single one of it. And that's the idea that you're creating an image of Hashem. You are created B'Tzelem Elohim. Tzelem Elohim means that you are an individual expression of the universal whole, i.e. what we mean when we say Hashem. Okay? And therefore, if you really loved yourself, you will really love everybody else, right? And you will naturally love Hashem also. Okay, let's hear some questions. Yeah, Jay.
Regarding that last point, obviously, like, if someone, like, you shouldn't, like, really truly hate someone, but if someone, like, just comes up to you on the street and, like, punches you, should your reaction just be, I love you, you're me? Or, like, because you can't love everyone the same way you like your friends or your family. So how do you deal with someone like...
Okay, well, you're asking two questions, and those are really good questions. First of all, I hate his behavior, I love him, and I pray that he will change his mind, okay, in the way he behaves. And I might report him, and probably will report him to the police, because they will also help him change his mind. Because he obviously doesn't love himself. Because if he really loved himself, he wouldn't go around punching people in the face, or wherever he punched, right? He's not going to do that, right? It's just people who don't love themselves treat others that way. But in the wrong sense of loving yourself, which would be loving your ego, that would create, you know, maybe violent behavior. But when you love your true self as a neshama which is, as the Ramak says, includes all other neshamas. Punching somebody in the face is as stupid as punching yourself in the face. As it says in the Gemara, that if your right hand were to actually cut your left hand, would your left hand take revenge and cut your right hand? Huh? No, ridiculous. And so too, if you were living your truth, and your truth is you are a neshama, and you as a neshama are bound up with all other neshamot, right? You wouldn't behave that way, okay? You wouldn't behave that way. And you've all heard the story about Rav Shlomo Carlbach, who was in a who would do concerts in prisons, and he asked them, well, is everybody coming to the concert? And they said, well, there's this one guy, but, you know, he's not going to come. So what do you mean? I want everybody to come. He says, no, forget about him. He's the worst guy here. He's like, you know, he's like a murderer or something. Rav Shlomo says, no, I got to see him. So he goes to this guy, and this guy's like this thug, and he's got scars all over, who knows what. And Rav Shlomo walks up to him and gives him a big hug and says, brother. And the guy says, I'm not your brother. And Rav Shlomo says, well, I'm yours, so, you know, I would love you to come to my concert. I'm not interested in the concert. He said, well, I hope you'll join. And the guy was so intrigued by Rav Shlomo's incredible unconditional love that he came to the concert. After the concert, when Rav Shlomo was leaving the prison, he sees this big thug running after him. He says, Rabbi, wait one second. And he says, what is it? Can I get another hug? Right. So Shlomo said, Gevalt, sure, and he gave him a big hug. And he says, Rabbi, if somebody would have given me a hug like that years ago, I wouldn't have been in a place like this. Okay? So that's it. People don't love themselves because they never felt maybe loved. All right? But the interesting, important point here is holiness is about love. Right? And he's saying, Rav Kook is saying that holiness is telling you that you are whole within yourself, and you're a whole with all other people, and you're a whole with the whole, which is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And if you are truly holy, if my finger loved itself, it would love my entire body. It would love me, because what is it without me? Okay? And so too, if you truly, truly loved yourself, you would naturally love other people. And if you truly loved other people, you would naturally love yourself. So let's describe two ways one could do kindness. So you're walking down the street, you see this guy on the street, he needs money, okay? Two people hand him $10. One did an act of morality, the other one did an act of holiness. What is the difference? Right? One did an act of morality, one did an act of holiness. What do you think is the difference? They both gave him $10, and we're really happy that they both gave him $10, right? But there is a very different experience happening. Yeah, go ahead.
Obligation, and the other did it from a place of love.
Okay. One, the morality one, felt, oi, poor guy. Oh my gosh, that could happen to me. I mean, maybe if I don't give him that money, you know, who knows, in the next reincarnation, I don't know what, I'll end up like that, who knows, you know, I feel so guilty with my money, right? I feel bad about myself because I have this money. He doesn't have this money. So I have to rein in on myself. It's not like I really feel like giving him the money. I don't really want to give him the money. I love my money. I love myself. But you know what? I'm scared, right? That if I don't give him the money, that I'll feel guilty, or that this kind of thing could maybe happen to me and I guess some bad thing will happen to me. That's okay. That's morality. That's okay. You see, the word musar, where does the word musar come from? Okay, so it's to deliver, moser. What else is it connected to? What is a prisoner called in Hebrew? An asir. A prisoner is an asir, okay? And musar also is connected to the word liaser, which means to cause pain. Musar means that I have to really rein in on myself. I've kind of got to, take control of myself. I have to overcome and do something that might not be what I feel like doing or even really want to be doing, but I feel it's the right thing to do, and I have to get over my self-love, right, and do that. But I have to get over my self-love to give it over to him because I'm imprisoned in my self-love. I got to get over that. Now, that's a good thing. We're happy that people do that. We're not diminishing the significance of a moral act. But Rav Kook is saying we want to get to a holy act. Okay? And to get to a holy act would be, I see myself on the street. That's me. Right? I see a piece of me on the street. Of course I'm going to help this guy. Right? And I don't feel that I gave up anything. Because me just got some of my money. Because we're all connected. It's a whole different level. Now, you can't get to Kedusha generally until you have trained yourself in morality. And that's because you have an ego. Okay? But when you can overcome your ego through morality and then tap into your soul, then you operate from a place of holiness. Did you follow that? Because what Rav Kook will say later on is there's two types of love. There's a small kind of self-love and there's a large self-love. Small love is I love my ego, okay? And I've confused my true identity with my ego. What is ego? Ego is I identify myself as self-contained, self-sufficient, independent. I'm not connected to you. You're not connected to me. My identity stands alone. That's ego, okay? But soul understands that I am whole with you. And if I'm not whole with you, I'm not whole with myself. Okay? So that's what Rav Kook is saying over here. Holiness does not fight against self-love. It does not, right? Deep embedded within the soul of every living being. But rather it sets man in a superior state that the more he loves himself, the more this guy in this picture loves himself, the more he will love everybody else. And the more he will love everybody else, the more he will love himself. Yes?
You said that we can't exist without each other. So, let's say I were to die, then what about the other people? Are they existing only because of me? How does that work?
You never die. We talked about that before, and we asked you not to try that out in the dorm. But you don't die. You as a soul don't die. You as an ego die, okay? But you as a soul don't die, okay? So you continue to exist. And what I want you to understand that your very identity includes every single Jew in all of history. And every human being in all history. That's really scary, you know? Right? Everything. Not just now. Avram Avinu is a part of yourself. And therefore, when you're learning Chumash, you're learning something about yourself. Because Avram Avinu is part of your very identity. Right? He is part of your soul. And you're a part of his soul. Okay? So, yeah.
How does this definition that the goal of life is Kedusha, how does that jive with, I guess, the definition that Kedusha means separateness?
It doesn't. Because Kedusha doesn't mean separateness. Kedusha means transcendence. It means to be nivdal. Nivdal is very different. Nivdal means I transcend. When I'm truly transcendent, I'm inclusive. I gave you an example. Let's say you got a guy who's an alcoholic. Okay? So the first step is you got to stay away from the alcohol. Is he still an alcoholic?
Yes.
Yes, he is an alcoholic. He's just with the greatest of admiration, staying away from alcohol. But he has not transcended alcohol. To transcend alcohol means that he doesn't have to stay away from it. He doesn't have to separate himself from it. What he needs to do is have the freedom to drink a little bit without becoming, so stuck in it that he finishes the whole bottle and another 10 bottles with it. He transcends it. That's why when we make Kiddush on Shabbos, we're actually making Kiddush on wine. Wine, which has a quality of addictiveness. The fact that we make Kiddush and wine is the whole point, that to be a Kadosh person, you transcend. And to transcend means you include. Just as we say about Hashem, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Hashem is so holy. What's the continuation? Male kol ha'aretz kvodo. His presence fills the world. I thought you just, he's separate. You said he's Kadosh, separate. He's Kadosh, he's even more separate. He's so separate that he's in this world. I thought you just said he's separate. No, not just you're separate, it means you're transcendent. You're so above it, you can be in it without being trapped by it. Right? Like I gave you an example of one of my students at Israelite that was meditating on a mountain naked in the east. I mean, this is before he got to Israelite. Now he's meditating with a gartel in Esherim. No, I'm just joking, right? So this guy was in the east, and he was meditating for months naked on the top of a mountain, okay? And I asked him, why were you doing that? What were you trying to accomplish? He said, I wanted to accomplish transcendence. Okay, very good, right? But that's not transcendence, right? That's escape, okay? To be holy because you're so removed from everybody, that's not holy, to remove yourself from everybody. Sometimes you need to do that, right? Just like in order to transcend alcohol, you first have to separate yourself from alcohol, okay? And so too, in the journey towards Kedusha, right, you might have to, in the early stages, separate yourself from material things, but nonetheless, right, Shabbos is the day that represents Kedusha. And Shabbos is the day that, I know for myself, I eat the most, right? Why is that true? Wouldn't you think that Shabbos would be the day that you fast? No, because the goal of Jewish life is not to fast. The goal of Jewish life is to transcend. And to transcend means I'm so above it, I can be in it without being trapped by it, right? I'm in the world, but not of the world. Okay, that's when you're living from a place of soul rather than from a place of ego. Okay, let's do a little bit more, and then you can. Oh, well, I have to have David ask a question. We got his parents here, right? A little nachas here. Okay, go ahead, David. All right, make it good, David. No pressure, David.
So, like, if a holy person walks by a poor man and like genuinely wants to give them money, so then why is not like every holy person in the world like going and volunteering in Africa to help people without water, or going to like, or just constantly doing chesed, if someone genuinely wants to do that?
They are doing constant chesed. The question is how many people are like that in the first place, but they are doing constant chesed. The question is, you might have a different understanding of what chesed is. Because we also believe that when you're sitting and learning Torah, that's also causing chesed in the world. Because because you're so connected to everybody, if you ascend to greater levels of self-awareness and God awareness, we're all ascending with you. That's a huge thing, right? Which we learned in the Ramak. When one of us does a mistake, then it impacts all of us. The entire world is on our shoulder, right? Because we're all part of each other. So if one of these people in this picture does something wrong, all of us in some way is impacted. And if one of us does something right? That's why when you do a mitzvah, if you say, L'shem yichud kutcha bricha v'shchinte, if you say that Kabbalistic premeditation before you do the mitzvah, it says, L'shem kol Yisrael, that I'm doing this mitzvah in the name of all of Israel. I'm not just doing it for myself. I'm doing it for the entire Jewish people. Okay? That's a pretty amazing level of consciousness, that you feel that sense of connectivity with all people. Who was the person that understood connection? Right? It was Zuckerberg. Right? He was smart. He realized that people crave connection. And why do we crave connection?
Because we're all
connected. Because we are connected. We're simply craving to live our truth. That's all it's about. It's about living your truth. We cannot but want to crave connection, right? And this is a good opportunity for me to quote my good friend over here, Mark Chernoff, because Mark told me a beautiful story where he was sitting with a very well-known rabbi in America, and they were talking about, you know, what is missing in the Jewish world. And Mark, as I remember the story, said to this guy, well, you first. And he said, I think affordability of Jewish education is the greatest challenge in the Jewish world. And Mark correctly said, no, I think the greatest challenge is connection. People are not feeling connected, right? Say, Mark, I learned a lot from you, right? And that's so true. That is so true. It's about connection. That's what Kedusha is. Kedusha is connection. But you're not making a connection because you don't need to make a connection. You're already connected. Are you living a connected life? Are you talking, thinking, and acting in ways that is enabling you to access yourself as a soul rather than an ego, a soul that experiences himself, herself as part of a greater whole, or an ego separated and set apart from the greater whole? That's the question. Are you a part of the greater whole, or are you a part from the greater whole? Yeah.
On the topic of connection, why is it that some things work two ways where, like, for example, learning Torah, you said that by myself enhancing my own knowledge of the Torah, it somehow affects the greater whole, but then also I would assume teaching Torah clearly affects the greater whole. But then some things, like tzedakah, let's say, my money is your money is also your money because all of us have the same money because we're all the same person. Why can't I just keep my money and say, oh.
Oh, well, first of all, we're not the same person. Remember, you're not the same person. I'm not you. You're not me. Judaism says, Sheli Shelcha, what is mine is yours, but Shelcha Shelcha. But what is yours. I don't assume that what is yours is mine. Right? That's the interesting relationship. So I'm not getting what your question is.
Because I'm saying that some things are transferable, but some things aren't. If I were to say, oh, I feel really terrible for that poor person, I'm going to have a steak dinner so that the whole collective, you know...
Well, but you know that doesn't work. You know that doesn't work. Even in the laws of tzedakah, you're not allowed to give all your money away. Right? There's a certain amount of money you're allowed to give and not more.
Yeah, okay. There's more of like a reductio ad absurdum, but... on the context of the greater argument.
That's a good word, no? Only the right to guys use words like that.
I'm taking the argument to its most extreme example. Clearly, obviously, buying these things is different than the other guy, but where's the line between...
The line is halacha. Judaism is saying that halacha is the path of Kedusha. How does one properly live a life whereby I am establishing my unique identity, right, while being part of everybody? There has to be this balance between times where I reinforce that I'm not you and you're not me, and then there's times and ways that we enforce and yet we are completely one, but not one and the same. And there are those, you know, very important borders and boundaries that enable us to do that. Yeah.
How far does transcendence go? Like, this is also, we're going to use this fancy to reject you and certain things. Right. Like, would you, like, walk into a strip club so you could learn Torah in there so you could, like, be surrounded by it all and transcend it? Like, that's obviously ridiculous, but how far does this idea of transcendence go that you would be trying to be surrounded by it but not be trapped by it?
Only halacha. Torah saying that halacha defines for a Jewish person the path of true transcendence, meaning that I am so above that I am within it without being trapped by it, right? And I transcend my ego and include everybody else, okay? Without forfeiting my commitment to myself. There's some people, you know, that are just so giving, there's nothing left of themselves. And there's some people that are holding on, and they're not giving anything to themselves. The balance of that is what halacha is aspiring to. Yeah.
So you said kedusha is transcendence and inclusiveness. So in the model of giving the $10 to the poor person, so the inclusiveness, I guess, would be feeling the love for them and giving it because like you genuinely want to. How is that transcendent?
Well, because you're transcending your ego. Your ego would say, hold on to your money. This guy's a bum. He probably deserves that. You transcend your ego and say, what are you talking about? He and I, in a deep way, share oneself. I'm not him, he's not me, but there's a little bit of him in me and there's a little bit of me in him, right? And that's what we talked about, how Yosef had this incredible charisma because he was an inclusive personality. He was the man with the multicolored coats. The other brother had single-colored coats. His identity included everybody else's identity. The truth is, all of us, that's an existential fact. The question is, how many people are aware of that and living according to it? Let's do a little bit more of the text here. Okay? I want you to go to number 5. Also, Rav Kook. The great thought of the oneness of being eliminates the question of love itself. The question considered by some as the root of sin and by others as the basis of morality. Rav Kook is saying the whole question of love. Now, what is the question of love? The question of love, is love a good thing? Or maybe love is a bad thing? In other words, it seems that love is the root of sin. Why? Because you love yourself too much. Right? And because you love yourself too much, right, you're doing all these things and you're not doing tzedakah and you're not, right, you just care about yourself, you only love yourself. On the other hand, the others would say, no, love is the basis of morality. Don't love yourself so much. Love other people more than yourself. So sin is that I love myself more than everybody else, right? And morality is I have to love everybody else more than I love myself. Well, that problem is no longer a problem anymore when you understand the true meaning of divine oneness. Why is it not a problem anymore?
You're loving the greater self.
And so therefore what?
Loving yourself. There is
no loving yourself or loving themselves more or less because they're all attached.
Because we're all connected. In other words, if you really loved yourself, you would love everybody else. And if you really loved everybody else, you'd love yourself. Right? Not that you confuse yourself to be the same as them. They're not you, you're not them, and yet, in the strangest way, what's not me is a part of me also. Okay? And so therefore, Rav Kook is saying that the great thought of oneness of being, Hashem Echad, Ein Od Milvado, there's just one God, one soul, one self, right? And we are to Hashem like a drop is to the ocean. And all the other drops are part of that ocean. And I'm part of all those other drops by virtue of that ocean. And we're all one. And so therefore, when it says, Ahavti L'recha Kamocha, Ani Hashem, Hashem is saying, I am Hashem. I am all there ever was, is, and ever will be. There is only one self, one soul. And if you knew that, then you'd realize that you are a chelek elokam yim'al. You are a facet of the divine. And so is the person next to you. And we are all connected to each other through this single self called Hashem. And so, so he says, let's just read a little bit more and then you can ask more questions. There is only love of all, which is truly self-love. And who is love of all? What does it mean to love Hashem? It means to love the all, right? In fact, Rav Tzadik refers to Hashem in a number of places in his writings as HaKol Yitbarach Shemo, right? The all, blessed be His name. Hashem is the all, okay? And when a person truly loves Hashem, right, then you will love people, right? And if you truly love people, you'd love Hashem and you'd love yourself. Even though they're not synonymous, they are completely interfaced and one with each other. So, we'll finish this piece. There is only love of all, which is truly self-love, enlightened and sublime. False self-love, which loves the small spark, visible to bleary eyes, and hates the clarifying selfhood, and this is blindness as foolish as it is wicked. What is the false self-love? There's true self-love and there's false self-love. What is the false self-love? Yes.
Ego.
It's ego. I love myself as a separate entity from everybody else, right? And I really work hard on feeling good about myself, right? By having expensive clothing and a big house and a big, not that you can't have that, but not if that's the source of your self-worth, right? And think that that's going to make you love yourself more, right? That's not the goal. So when a person loves themselves in this deluded way that myself stands separate from you and all these people are a threat to my self-worth, Right? That's why we talked about it. A person that runs after kavod, right, honor, kavod runs away from them. A person who runs away from kavod, kavod runs after you. Right? You never win. If you run after it, it runs away. If you run away from it, it runs after you. Right? What's the point? If you're running after kavod, if you're looking for people to say to you, you're great, you're wonderful, you're so fantastic, right? If you're looking to get your lights, your name in lights and on, in the headlines, and that's going to make you feel good about yourself because that means you really love yourself, you got the wrong self. You're just looking for kavod, right? A person that runs after kavod doesn't know who they are. Because if you knew who you are, you're a neshama. And what is a neshama? A chelek eloka, so to speak, a facet, a piece of God. Of course, Hashem doesn't break up into pieces. And who is Hashem? Malei kvodo, right? He is kavod, right? So you wouldn't need to run after other people's praise and approval if you were truly living yourself as a soul, right? You wouldn't need it. So you wouldn't even interest you. You wouldn't run after it, right? It doesn't interest you. And if you run away from it, that also means that you're very much into it, right? Because, no, don't give me kavod. No, you know, the fact that it's even a question in your life. It's like, what's kavod? Right? I'm just going to be myself. Now, that's an amazing thing. That the goal of a Torah life is to be yourself. But your real self. Your true self, right? Your godly self. As we mentioned, that if you taste a drop of the ocean, you have tasted the entire ocean. You don't need to keep drinking to know what the ocean tastes like. When you taste your true self as a soul, you have tasted Hashem at that moment. Right? And that's what's driving us. We're all driven to taste that sense of being, that beingness. Okay? So when you have false self-love and you love the little self, the ego self, right? Then it's your bleary eyes. In other words, this guy over here, he's going to love himself and all these people are cramping in style and everybody's getting off, get off my back. You're cramping my style. Right? Can't have you around me. You need me around you because we're all connected. He emerges out of the culmination of everybody here and so do they from him. Okay, so what did we learn at this point? We learned the difference between Kedusha and morality. And the truth is you'll have to go through morality to get to Kedusha because we are all suffering false self-love. Right? We're in a world that encourages it. We're in a world that supports it. Right? But what we're really looking for is to be part of the greater. You know why we're looking to feel part of the greater? Because we are part of the greater. You don't have to accomplish that. You are that. The question is, do you think, speak, and act in ways that enables you to live yourself as part of the greater? You know? Right? I mean, I don't want to date myself, but I remember seeing the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. You guys heard of the Beatles? Yeah. Okay. Right? Did you hear of Ed Sullivan? Okay. So Ed Sullivan had this variety show, and I remember seeing the Beatles on their debut on the Ed Sullivan Show. I must have been minus 20 years old at the time, right? And there I was watching, and I could not believe my eyes. It was people, the worship. People were fainting in the audience. People were screaming. It was like they just wanted a piece of Paul, a piece of George, you know, like, wow. What is that worship? Why do we worship? Because they want to feel part of the greater, right? And so in their minds, they're part of the greater, right? John Lennon said, we're more famous than Jesus. You know what I mean? The people didn't really appreciate that comment, right? But that's the point. If people buy a t-shirt with some famous rock star on them, why would you want that, right? Because you want to feel part of their greatness. Right? Right? I saw a chewing gum that was chewed by Britney Spears was sold on eBay for hundreds of dollars. No one's buying my bubble gum that I chewed, not even buying the one I didn't chew. Right? Why would you want a piece of gum that Britney Spears chews? Because, well, if you think she's great, then you want to feel a piece of the greatness in your life. This is the psychology of the human being. This is the drive, the crave for Kedusha. In a confused way, because Kedusha is about wanting to be part of the greater whole, and that's because you already are part of the greater whole. It's just a tzimtzum, it's just a diminished consciousness, which you need to get over in order to really connect to your true self. Okay, let's hear some more questions on what we just shared. Yeah.
So if you achieve Kedusha through Halacha, and Halacha is only for Jews, then could Goyim achieve Kedusha through someone?
Yes, of course. They have the seven mitzvahs B'nai Noach. And if someone were to write a Shulchan Aruch for the non-Jews, which I heard actually is being done right now, then it would include 3/4 of our Shulchan Aruch. Right? So you have to understand, it's not like, oh, you know, they just have 7 mitzvahs. What are you talking about? They have lots to do. And everybody, as it says in the Midrash, that the Shekhinah, the presence of Hashem, rests on a man and a woman, on a Jew and a non-Jew, according to their deeds. Okay, everybody can be a vehicle for the presence of the Shekhinah. What is the presence of the Shekhinah? The presence of the universal self within each and every one of us. That feeling that my identity includes the greater whole. And the greater whole is manifest and present within me also. Just like within this guy is everybody. And the picture goes on and on and on. That's what's so beautiful about the picture. Right? This endlessness. I am a unique individual expression of that endlessness. The endless is an inherent part of my very identity. Okay? Yeah.
So, what about times when morality and knowingness come into conflict?
Ah, that's a great question. Those are the difficult questions that poskim have to handle. Right? But those.
It's a case by case.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. Yeah.
For people who are, like, I guess, so to speak, not recognizing their greater self, are we supposed to love them in sort of a Kedusha perspective, to love them, like, as they are now, or, like, what they can be?
Well, you know, it's not that you're loving them as an essential soul. It doesn't mean that you love their philosophy. It doesn't mean that you love their behavior. It doesn't mean that you love their political, you know, position. But you know that they are a soul and they're much greater than their thoughts and much greater than their position, right? And all that could change, okay? So you love them, but that doesn't mean that you love their behavior. If you really love them, that's why we've learned that tochacha, which means rebuke, right, means to prove something. Tochacha also means, lochiach means to rebuke, and lochiach means to prove something. What are you proving? When you give a person subtle, sweet, proper rebuke, you're proving to them that you love them, okay? That's why even in English it's called reproof, right? Because you are proving, I care about you, right? And we should care about the world, all right? And not just walk away from it. Yeah?
I have 2 questions. First, what, like certain communities in America and maybe here also, believe that turning in another Jew to the police is worse than the crime that might have been committed by a Jew. So is that taking this idea too far, or is that an appropriate...
Yeah, no, you have to protect the community, you know. If a Jewish person is dangerous, right, then you're doing him a favor by reporting him to the police. If you don't, you don't really love him.
Someone's right? Engaged in fraud, maybe.
Even so, he's frauding somebody else. I mean, you know, not so simple. Let's learn a little bit more, and then we'll go back to more questions. Last piece of Rav Kook that on this page. Life itself, all of life, its very essence, cannot possibly be anything other than the elemental longing to be close to God. Wow, what a powerful sentence. Life, all of life. Right, cannot be described. The essence cannot be anything other than a longing to be close to Hashem. That is just self-expression. Right? If you are living yourself, you are longing to feel connected to the greater self, which is Hashem. As I mentioned to you once before, Rav Soloveitchik actually refers to Hashem as the great self in the Lonely Man of Faith. Okay? So there's the great self, the all-inclusive, all-encompassing self, right? Rachmana, so to speak, and ourselves, which is a facet of that oneself. And therefore, what it means to be alive is to live that longing to be close to Hashem. Now, what does it mean to be close to Hashem? When are you not close to Hashem? You're always close to Hashem, about being conscious of your connection. The connection's already there. Thus, it fulfills the unique connotation of human life. What is unique about human life? What makes your life a human life? Right? It is the desire for a sense of self shared by all creatures. Right? That is what makes you human, is that you want a sense of self, a self that you share with all people. You know, as I mentioned to you, when I was a teenager, I went to rock concerts, and my favorite moment was when everybody would hold a match. There was this sense that I was part of this big bonfire, right? There was this feeling at the concert that we were all connected, that we were rocking and rolling together, you know, or at the sports game where everybody's doing the wave. There is this desire to feel part of a greater whole. And that's what's driving us all, to become part of a greater whole. Everything is seeking wholeness. In fact, a friend of mine who is an expert in nutrition, he explains, why is it that whole food is healthier than non-whole food? Because when the food is no longer whole, since everything aspires to wholeness, if you put something in your body that's not whole, then it'll take away from you because it's trying to become whole, right? But if you put something in your body that's whole, then you'll be able to take its nutrition out of it because you need to become whole, and it's already whole, so you're able to draw from it. Right? So when a person, let's say, takes white flour, which has been bleached and is no longer whole wheat, then the white flour is actually taking away from you because its natural movement is to try and complete itself. Because it was caused to become incomplete, it will try and complete itself by taking from you. But if you put whole food in your body, well, then you're the one that's craving to become more complete. It's already complete as a grain. Right? And therefore, there's no competition for the movement of completion. Whether you accept that or not, right now, we're going to go on. The point is, along with the striving for completeness, we are striving for shleimut. And that's what holiness means. It's just spelt wrong. It's wholeness. We want to be whole. And that is the goal. The goal is be whole. In this, it is a true shadow of the absolute. When a human being is living to become whole, then they are shadowing, the absolute, unconditional life of the absolute divine. Right? In the image of Hashem, He created him. That's what it means to live in the image of Hashem. It is the image of wholeness. And we are constantly craving to become more whole and more whole and more whole. And that is what Torah life is about, to help us become more whole with ourselves, with our communities, right? With the Jewish people, with the world, with Hashem. Yeah?
Do you want to become whole, or can one only just strive to be whole?
I'm not sure. I don't understand your question. Like, you are, in essence, already whole, but you need to become conscious of that wholeness.
Is it an attainable thing? Or is it just something that we should strive
for? Oh. The truth is, because of Ein Sof, it's not attainable. You can always become more whole. You can always become more whole.
Like the American dream, kind of? Like the goal is to want to be whole?
That's the American dream?
Well, no. The American dream is to want to work. Right? It's not to...
What's that got to do with being whole, wanting to work?
Right, whole is not the end. I mean, it's not the... it's like the means. Like, you want to be whole.
Like, no, there is a whole, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's you, which is a part of the whole. And you, as a part of the whole, want to experience yourself more and more a whole part is more part of a whole. Right? So to be a whole part, then you want to become more part of a whole. And even though in essence you already are, right? Ki chelek Hashem amo, because a part of Hashem is His people, as it says in Dvarim chapter 32, right? But that's in essence, you are one with Hashem, you are one with me, we are one with everybody else. Even though we are not each other, we are part of each other in a profound way. And therefore, as I mentioned the other day, it's all about love. Right? Love, 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 all you need is love. But it's not easy. Right? It's not easy. But that is the path. The path of holiness is the path of love. Yeah.
So why is it better for someone, if he could do better for the collective whole by neglecting himself, and he's doing more good by helping other people, but at the same time he is neglecting himself, why?
Oh, I don't know what that means, to neglect yourself. You don't have the right to be doing something.
You only have an obligation to give 10% of your money, and you have an obligation to not give more than 20%, but you decide that you could live fine with 10% of your own money, give away 90% of your money, and it contributes more good to the collective whole. But not just with money, let's say with you're neglecting your family life or you're neglecting your happiness, but as a result of the collective whole is doing better because you're affecting, let's say, 1,000 people with your goodness, and the one person, you, is living a worse off life.
Well, I think if this is properly balanced, then a person wouldn't feel that way. I don't think a person has the right to sacrifice their family, you know, for the greater whole. Just like in this case, the people that are most directly connected to him will call his family, right? So, because you can see, even in this picture over here, there are people that he's literally interfaced. They're interfaced with other people, which is interfaced with other people. But he can't go helping this person over here without helping the person that's closest to him. And therefore, your laws for tzedakah, you know, the Arizal says that if you're nice to everybody but your spouse, all your chesed is worthless. Right? You don't have chesed for your spouse, but you have chesed for everybody else, then there's something wrong here. Your own spouse you're not kind to, but you're kind to strangers, then that's not coming from a holy place. Right? Yeah. That's not coming from a holy place. That's coming from an ego. You need or you want their acknowledgement. Your wife, she's already in. You know, what can I do? She's already, I have no choice, you know. That's the sad thing. I mean, I had a student, her father was a famous doctor in America. And he used to beat her up, right? But what he would do for people, I mean, everybody said he was a tzaddik. He was a huge tzaddik in the community. His selflessness to help his patients. But he abused his daughter. He would literally, she had a black eye from the guy, right? So is that a man who loves people so much? No, he actually hates himself and is trying to convince other people to love him and give him the love that he can't give himself. That's already the strategy of your ego. You know, when people are in a marriage and they're really looking for the love they can't give themselves from their spouse, even when they get the love from their spouse, they won't accept it. Just like the famous joke about Woody Allen, who said, "I'd never date a woman that would date me, because anybody that would date me is not worth dating." Right? Or Groucho Marx, who said, "I would never join a club that would have me as a member. Any club that would have me as a member is not worth dating." Or Charlie Brown, who's in love with, you know, the little redheaded girl, which I couldn't understand that, right? But when she showed him interest, not so fast, you know what I mean? Right? Because as soon as she shows interest in him, his low self-worth already says, well, there's something wrong with her, right? So if you don't love yourself, even if everybody else loves you, you won't believe they love you, because you don't love you, right? And so, but how does one get to that place of love? It's by getting in touch with your real self and start taking care of yourself, right? Taking care of everybody else while denying yourself, something's not balanced there. Something's not healthy there. Right? Even the word health, you know where the word health comes from? Whole. Health is the Latin word for whole. Right? It comes from a Latin word that means to be whole. A healthy person is a person that's whole. Okay? And a whole person is a person that has balance and all the facets of their life is properly balanced within themselves. Okay? Yeah.
When we talk about loving someone else that maybe you don't know, what type of relationship, what type of love should you have with them? Should it be more like a like a parent-child relationship.
Okay. So it's important to understand, I'm glad you asked this question. The mitzvah to love your neighbor as yourself is not a mitzvah to have a feeling. We cannot command you to feel something, right? We can only command you to act in a certain way, okay? So treat other people as you would like them to treat you. Treat them like you would want them to be, you be treated. Don't treat them in ways that you wouldn't want to be treated. But it's an action. Whether that action will generate a feeling of love, very likely yes. But if it doesn't, that's not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to be nice, okay? Be nice, okay? And that's when you are bringing Hashem into the world. When you're showing and acting in a loving way, you are bringing Hashem into the world. Just like one of my students said, you know, when we were in yeshiva, you know, Torah and this and that, but now I'm in university and it's not the same. I said, wait, why is it not the same? Why can't you find Hashem, you know, on campus? Well, he couldn't get into my campus, you know. But why can't you find Hashem on, you know, in campus? And the answer is, what are you talking about? Show love. That's why we do the random acts of kindness. There's no reason why when you're in the cafeteria and this person's got this boring job to put mashed potatoes on your plate, you have an opportunity to smile at them, thank them. By the way, what's your name? You know, and thank you so much. You do that so well. I don't know. So how do you do that? You know, I'm here in Harvard. I don't think I'll be able to do that as well as you, right? I mean, but you know, like a kind word, you know what a kind word does for a person? There is no question that every single one of you in this room knows somebody right now that could use a kind word. So your homework is tonight, call them and give them a kind word. You will change their life, at least for that day. Everybody, right? That's bringing Hashem in the world, right? That's living your wholeness. Right, that's a behavior that would release you from your ego and tap you more into your soul. Okay, we're going over time, but go ahead.
Okay, so just to go back a little bit. Is there any value to have that morality which is separate from halacha?
Not separate from halacha. But, you know, it's not so simple. That's already a question that, you know, to have a shiur on the meaning of psak and how psak is determined. Because even within Torah, you will have times where halakhic values are in a situation whereby they are in conflict with each other. And the question of the posek is how to figure out, in this case, what needs to happen. Right? And then there's a certain thing called horat sha'ah, which are unique moments where things are being done non-halakhically, you know. And so that's already a whole different class. We'll take one more question. Yeah.
What does it mean, don't be jealous?
You see, what does it mean to not be jealous? How can I be jealous of you when you're a part of me? Right? If I was at that level of soul consciousness, right, then your success is my success. Because again, going back to this picture, if one of these people in this picture succeed, right? Oh, no, no, that's what you meant in terms of feeling. No, it means not to act out your jealousy. You're going to sometimes feel jealousy. Right. The first thing is not to act out your jealousy. How would you act out your jealousy? Speaking lashon hara against them. Right. God forbid, stealing from them. You know. But to feel that jealousy, you have to make sure. Like same thing with anger. We can't command you to not feel anger. You're going to feel anger. The question is, do you allow it to become rage? Do you hold on to it and turn it into resentment? But there's going to be times that you're going to feel anger. Don't act out on it. And, you know, and it will hopefully subside. Anyway, shkoyach to everybody.
Thank you so much.
Shabbos.